I feel like, according to the what you mentioned about the king and the boomer, I think that's just like a. It just is this way now at this point.
Oh,
you know?
You just accepted it. Okay.
I am, yeah. I mean, I just accepted it because I enjoy these memes. I enjoy being, you know, meme for my spears. I enjoy being meme for being such a veteran player, for playing a long time. And I still think people do actually appreciate me, and I still think people think I'm good. But of course, I would say 95% of my streaming as well that I've been doing for God knows how many years now. I think probably like 8 years. I also meme a lot. I joke a lot. So I feel like it's quite normal. I also don't have hard feelings for LEC for calling me a boomer. I think that it was a good joke. Of course, it's more like painful for some of the fans now that I'm playing in Heretics because we don't do as well. Sure. If I'm in G2 and we are winning, of course, or any other team and we are winning, everyone would be like, haha, this old boomer is like, you know, old and he's still playing. But now that I'm in Heretics and we are not doing as well, then when people meme me, oh no, he should still be appreciated. He's still good at the game. So I feel like the difference is only how good you are at the game and people wouldn't actually mind it.
I've heard when he came back in summer, there was even some mad thing where the only way he was allowed to come back was he had to be like in a different room or like an apartment or something. He wasn't even with the other four players.
Yeah,
you would scrim and then you managed to qualify for Worlds, and somehow at Worlds, I was told, dude, even before the semi-final, like, mate, we could basically win Worlds and this team's never played again with this five players next year. Like, it's just a one-off last thing sort of. So give me that story, because if a fan doesn't know it, they would always think if you make like a big placing, everyone must like get along, or it must be like, sounds like a very weird setup. It sounds like one of the weirdest setups ever. The player's not even in the room.
I mean, I think basically I was very like convinced that I want to play with a different AD carry back then, right? I wanted to like stick with Freeze, but the problem is that Freeze had issues with hand.
Yes.
So he kind of performed very poorly as well. And our org decided that it was mainly, I think, H2K's decision that like the only way we make it to Worlds is with Forgiven, because he can actually like play better than Freeze right now. So then they brought back Forgiven, but yeah, the idea was he plays from a different room in a different apartment. Basically in a different apartment. So he was playing from a different apartment. So then when we reviewed the games, he was like not part of it. We would just review as four people. We would try to learn concepts as four people. And we kind of expected him to like just auto-attack. And that's good because he was good at auto-attacking. He was good at, like, you know, sidestepping, at maximizing damage output. And then whatever, he would die or not. I mean, that was just like a different story. But the deal was that he wouldn't like make comments in game as much. And, you know, the reviews would be without him. So then he had time to like chill out, right? And then somehow we made it to Worlds. And then I think we went like 1-3 or something. I don't remember like the first week of Worlds. I think it was four teams or so. But I just remember we lost like most of the games, and then we hated each other. Like, not like all of us hated each other, but like the atmosphere in the team was terrible. Like, it was just awful. And then somehow we, you know, made quarters, and then in quarters we had one of the worst teams at Worlds.
True.
Making quarters, so we got lucky, and then we made semis. That being said, that team did beat, I think, G2 Esports back then, right?
Yeah.
Which were the strongest European team. So it's not like they were like bad in BO1, but like I couldn't imagine ourselves losing to them. So then we trioed them, and then we made semis, and then the story it was the first 0-3 in my professional career at the international stage. There were like a couple of 0-3s after.
Right, sure.
But that was the first 0-3.
Right. When you have that sort of a team, was that actually a flaw to the team? Like, do you believe, for example, I mean, you've been through now many different organizations. Do you think that people should have like a very harsh mentality when it comes to like, if a player seems like he's dropped off, his motivation isn't there or whatever, should you remove a player immediately when it's like that? Do you have a philosophy on that from your experiences?
Yeah, from my experience, it's definitely better to kick them faster than to worry about kicking somebody too fast, I guess.
Right.
Like, I think the only time, we kicked like 20 people probably off CLG, 10, 20 people. The only time I felt like we kicked somebody off way too fast and without giving them a second chance was Voyboy. Like, I really felt like Voyboy had a ton of potential as a player, and I don't even remember why we kicked him. I feel like we only kicked him because Hotshot wanted to play top lane again. Yeah, that was the most messed up thing ever. He wasn't even bad. Like,
oh no, this is what's good, is that you don't realize that, because like you're saying now, like you feel like it was a mistake. There's actually a detail from the grill that I did with Voyboy, which at the time, Voyboy said in his interview, because obviously this is after he'd been kicked from CLG like a year later or something, you know. He even says in this interview, like, because he's complaining, like, you know, what, I wasn't that bad. Like, I need to be kicked off the team. And he said some detail, right, along the lines of, like, what's bizarre is that they kicked me off the team, and then the same day, Doublelift told me I'm the best top player in North America. So then he's just like, what the fuck? Like, I'm the best. Like, so it makes it sound even worse, doesn't it? But I get the context there. The point obviously is it wasn't necessarily your choice to kick him. And so maybe you just said that to, you know, kind of be like, hey, keep your head up or something.
Yeah, no, I liked Voyboy a lot. He was this happy, he still is happy-go-lucky dude, you know, really, really earnestly positive guy.
Probably a mistake to join CLG then.
Terrible environment. The worst environment for him. I think we just tore him down as a human being. Like, we ripped his soul.
The summer split obviously had its own fuckery because it was the whole Korean boot camp and then everything falling apart. But I always tell people this. Like, people wait, actually, who are fans, wait too long to give you and Afro credit as a bot lane. They wait until CLG wins the LCS, basically, to finally be like, see, oh, I guess they are a good bot lane. I always tell people, just because CLG was failing as a team and in the playoffs, that bot lane was pretty much amazing from, like, season four on, right? I mean, that was the era when that was half the problem with Seraph, right, is that the bot lane was sick, but then if everyone else feeds away in the top lane and then Link fucks up something in the mid lane, then you can't win the game with one lane, so... In a weird sense, I don't want to make excuses for you, but I can understand where the frustrations would come from if you're in a team like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was pretty rough. I feel like there's a lot of resentment, not only because like we were the best part of the team and like we kind of knew it, but like we were also the most popular part of the team because like Seraph and Link didn't have very many fans. So I think like it's all these like little tiny things that always make like a big difference. Like when we have fan meets, you know, and people, they don't even know who like Seraph and Link are. Like they just like barely know their names or something, but they like spend like a minute like gushing about me and Afro. I'm like, oh, I watch your streams all the time. You guys are so funny together. It's like, I feel, I don't know.
And then people are doing that shit,
but it's actually kind of fucked up.
No, that's the sort of scenario, right, where someone comes up to Seraph and he's thinking like, oh, finally they're going to recognize me. And they're like, hey, could you take a picture of me and Doublelift together? And then it's like, that's like the worst feeling, obviously, in the world, isn't it? Like, if you're actually a pro player. I will say, back then, I think he was one of the first players I ever saw where he was almost like loved as much as he was hated. Like the people who loved him would be like, but why don't you win more? Which is like, that already sounds like a hater comment, guys. And then the haters were obviously just like, anytime he loses, like, you're just fucking overrated. Like, you shit, you don't know how to play, that Protoss was better. By the way, the ultimate insult's probably the last one. That's the joke I would throw in there. But basically, give me some thoughts on now, all these years later, who was Idra? Because I mean, the way he exited StarCraft, sadly, that wasn't really the way he should have gone out. You know, it would have been cool if he'd gone out on top and it had been like a respectful sender. Like, he's someone in the West would be in a Hall of Fame in RTS. But I feel like the way he went out, like, people just remember the drama and they think he was never a good player or something, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's sad the way he went out. But, like, I mean, I've known Idra forever. Like, I used to run the best North American team and in Brood War called Micromedia. And he was actually brought to me when he was like not known, and you know, a mutual friend who was also on the team, Skew, brought him, and he's like, this guy's really good, let's play him some, let's see. So I played him and he just fit in perfectly with us. He was an angry Terran player, which is basically what we all were, right? Because Terran is such a pain in the ass in Brood War, but he just kind of fit in really well. And yeah, he had that kind of temper. This is something that like happens a lot. It's like a meme at this point about like playing Terran in StarCraft 1, because it's like, if anything goes wrong at all, you lose anything. Like, you have to basically play flawlessly. And if you can do that, you can win championships, but it's like ridiculously hard to do. So he had this mentality that not a lot of people have. It's like the most unplayed race at this point in StarCraft. But you know, that's the type of mindset, right, that you kind of have as one of those players. And, you know, I'm known as a salty player. He was known as a salty player. And as, you know, he worked really, really hard and became the best non-Korean Brood War player for a good chunk of time in there. You know, he got so popular and so big at the beginning there that, and to watch, like you said, anytime anything goes wrong, everyone is all over him. Like, I remember there was this hilarious short period in the beginning of Wings of Liberty where, like, literally, if you beat Hydra all, like, in a online cup or something, you'd get signed to a team immediately. This actually happened. I remember watching this and be like, I can't believe that this terrible guy that just all into Hydra just got signed to a team the next day. Like, that's insane. And then, of course, these guys would disappear because they actually are trash. It's just people are like, well, he beat Hydra. He must be really good. But yeah, when you're watching all of this happen and people are shit talking you because you're kind of an emotional, angry player, I think that, you know, he definitely was like kind of a villain of sorts, right? Where a lot of people like to have, you know, are fans of people that like they aren't doing anything villainous. I don't know how to describe it exactly, right? But Hydra was very
They cheered against him, right? They wanted him to lose.
Yeah. Well, when he loses, it's more fun in a lot of ways, right, because he actually will say something. True. Like, a lot of people that are nice with, like, remember Liquid Hero? Like, he loses, he just kind of gets sad. And yes, it's like, oh man, I like really feel, you can see the tears in his eyes. Like, he lost. He really means a lot to him. Well, it meant a lot to Hydra too. It's just, he showed it in a different way. He showed it by flicking off MC or whatever, right? Like, that's, you know, he showed that different type of emotion. And it's funny because it, like, the dividing the scene like that into like haters and big time fans, that's like the most powerful thing you can do, I think. And that's something that is like really missing when you look at most esports nowadays, yes, especially as esports get older and like you get more and more people that have just quietly grinded for 10 years that are pros now. You don't get these types of personalities anymore, but they are like the biggest things for the game.
What does your dad think then of the whole being able to get a career out of being commentator and getting to do, I mean, like, this is an example of where to someone else, if they don't know the background, might not mean much. But I assume since you guys are so into hockey, et cetera, like that, doing that MLG Columbus must have been sick for him, right? When you were in Jackets Arena and, you know, Nationwide Arena that they play in, et cetera.
Yeah, that was the first. So you met my father actually and my mother there. That was the first event that like they came to that I got them there and said like, you guys need to see this. And that was like the perfect event to bring them to because dad was like completely enamored with it. He was like, this is amazing. Like, the whole arena is so loud. My dad's a big tech guy. Like, he used to do a lot of like music setups and stuff, like running big projectors and speakers. So he was like looking at the stage like, holy shit, that stage is insane. And he was loving it. Early on with dad, it was interesting because dad's very ambitious business-wise, and he was like, I also played a lot of sports, so for two reasons he was like, why are you in your room? Are you making any money? Like, what are you doing? And I used to like close myself off completely. It'd be like a beautiful summer day, like my friends would call and be like, let's go hang out somewhere, and I'd be like, nah, I'm just gonna play games. Like, and it was like they used to pass for my internet and stuff. And I moved away, I went to university, I played a lot more on my own obviously, and they couldn't control that. But even still, I was doing a lot of commentary and dad didn't understand it. And he was like, oh, whatever. Like, even though he was a commentator, he was like, are you making money? Can you make money? I did two ESEA lands where they literally paid for my plane ticket. And both times I lost money being there.
Okay.
And like whatever else. I was just typical ESEA at the time. And both times he was like, well, that's not, you shouldn't be doing it if you're not making any money. And then when I did X Games, I told him I was going and I was getting paid and everything was great. And he was like, okay, that's cool. And then at the end of the event, I had a bunch of texts being like, good job, good job, good job. And then I had one text from my dad being like, your voice sounds like shit. We need to work on your breathing. And I was like, okay, that's the moment. That's it. Dad's on board.
But he's into it though, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's okay. Dad. That was dad's way of saying, all right, we need to work on this.
What role do you actually think talent plays in becoming a commentator? Like, do you think there really could be a guy who's just very, you know, obviously he can't be terrible, but he's just a very plain, he's very just like a 5 out of 10 in every category. If that guy had the right mindset or the right mentorship or he studied enough, could that guy become a top caster? Do you think they have to have something innate?
Yeah, do you mean of the current, like, sort of younger talent that want to get in, there's someone that could
this
break
this is
through,
a general concept for casting in general?
Okay. I mean, yeah, if you want to lead off to like there's obviously politics and stuff that can hold some people back. I think talent will always get noticed. So like, if you are very natural, the other thing I will say is a lot of young talent make a mistake where they compete with their co-caster. Like, why? It's not Formula One. You don't have to beat your teammate because he's the only one on the same machinery. You're both better off if you have good chemistry. And that was something that like I realized really early, like don't ever compete with them. There's no point. You're just making your both yourself, like both of you look bad. So yeah, as long as you're like super workable, you have good chemistry, you're genuinely into it, like talent will get noticed. But I still think that like you can be a 10 out of 10 at a talent and you won't make it to the top necessarily because there's a lot of other background personality things. Like you've got to get along with the people you're working with. We spend a lot of time on the road together. You know, you've got to be someone who's sociable. I think the social aspect and social dynamic is super important in the Counter-Strike casting scene because we tend to, more than other games I've seen, go out a little more for dinner or drinks or whatever and party. And that's kind of part of our dynamic in a lot of ways. So yeah, I think if like, if you're asking like how much does raw talent help, it's definitely going to get you started, but it's not going to get you all the way to the top.
One other thing was during this time, just before you got Carrigan, was when you had all those tournaments. Where, like I say, the playoffs never happened, but the most epic one, because it was just like, if you remember, this was ESL Cologne, where you got the group of death, where group was like SK Gaming, best team in the world. G2 was just fucking beating SK Gaming and won like a LAN. Fnatic, like with all the fights. And then your team, and it's like, mate, and remember, only two teams are getting out of this group. Because one thing I even remember about this, right, this is what I want to ask you about, was famously, when you guys, like in the BO1, I think you beat Fnatic or upset them or some shit. So when you did that, right, because it meant that, like, logically, like, I think G2 and Fnatic, one of them, like, couldn't get out at this point or something. I did some, like, edgy tweet that was like, oh, thanks, Faze, for fucking up the whole group, you know? Because my whole thing was like, you're not going to do anything in the playoffs. And I remember Rain just, like, replied and was just like, fuck you or something, right? And what's mad is, at the time, I thought, like, oh, maybe Faze is actually, they think they're going to do it. Okay, they're getting a bit cocky. And then, obviously, you guys didn't make it. So, but then I saw you at the event, and it's like, mate, you look like someone shot your dog or something. So I was thinking, like, what was going through everyone's heads at this time? Like, did the team actually really believe, like, we could actually do it, we can get out of this group? Was it like, fuck, we'll try, I guess?
Oh, that was pain when we got the group, 100%. You know, you wait for Cologne every year and then you get that fucking group. But you gotta say it. You gotta say that you believe. You gotta, you know, try to fool yourself that you believe. But looking back, I don't think we were fucking believing that we could get out of that group. Of course, winning the best of one gave, if I don't remember wrong, it's like win one best of one, you win one more best of one, you're fucking out of the group.
Yes.
As a winner, you know?
Yes.
So, and the loser match, or the elimination match, was best of three.
Yep.
Or was, yeah. So winning the first match definitely gave us a chance. You know, all you need to do is just deliver one more good best of one. But I don't think we really believe that, you know, we could get out of that group. I think that's just, you know, you put on a mask.
I can't remember the specific match, but it was when I was at E-League. I think it was E-League Season 2 when Carrigan just came in. I remember there was like a game. It could have been Season 1 as well. It was one of the E-League tournaments for sure. Because I remember doing the actual, you know, when you do like after each map on the analyst desk. So the problem with that is naturally you end up doing, everything's a hot take, isn't it? The guy who top frags on one map. It's like, see, this is why he's a great player. And you did this, right? You had one game. I think it was like, I can't remember what map it was. You had one game where you popped off. You had like 27 kills or 30 kills. And so we went on the desk and we obviously had to be like, this is why they kept him from Cluj. You know, they believed in him. And then I think you know where the story's going. Then in the next map, I'm not joking, you might have had like three frags or something. It was like, holy shit, bloody hell. You know, it was one of those ones, like, because that was what your game was like. It could just be mad up and down, right?
It was fucking up and down. There was no consistency. I think I remember. I think it was Overpass versus C9 where I popped off.
Okay.
Yeah. It was like elimination match or like a match to reach the playoffs or something like that. Or like win the group, but I can't remember. And then I don't remember the three frags one, but I definitely had a couple of them in face. Sure. And it was rough times. I think I also remember DreamHack Bucharesti or whatever. We played like a best of three versus, I think it was Dignitas at the time. And we lost 2-0, and I had a total of 9 frags in 2 maps. And I remember I had an eco ace where they rushed ramp. I had P90.
Oh, that's even worse. What, that was one round just half of
that it. Was like over, that was legit over 50% of the frags. It was a fucking
that's
eco
even
ace.
Worse.
And I remember the played back, I was like, holy shit, if I don't lose my job, then I don't know what, I don't know, God is saving me, I guess.
The Beatles said they get by with a little help from their friends, but I get by with a little help from my Patreon community. And this video was kindly supported by Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Ahmed Haju, Bot Pounder 420, Toucan, Animosity, Tobias Bernasconi, Jensen Gore, Tosh, and a special thanks always goes out to my main man, Jerky's Minion. Would you like to ask me a question in my monthly video AMA? Do you want teasers to find out who are the upcoming guests? Maybe you want to take part in one of those lengthy but intense esports discussions I have with my donators, or maybe you want to suggest a guest or a topic that I could cover. Well, if any of those tickle your fancy, put your money where your mouth is, and join the Skrilluminati today, where, in the description box below, there is a Patreon link.